Go ahead.
Hello, this is the Press Row Podcast with my daddy.
Welcome to the Press Row Podcast, the definitive sports video game show brought to you by Operation Sports. I'm your host, Richard Grisham. Well, all right, we are back. Welcome, everybody. It is the Press Row Podcast for your Friday, May 8th, 2015. Hello. Thank you so much for listening. Got a fun show here for you today. We have several of our regular longtime Press Row panelists moving from left to right on your radio. First, from Washington, from Pasta Padre, Mr. Brian Weed. Hi, Brian. Welcome to the show.
Thanks. Happy to be back on another recording. I have no intriguing story to open the show with. I'm sorry.
Well, you know, it's you know, the NHL playoffs, baseball season, NBA playoffs, you know.
Yeah, I have no teams involved in any of this, really. So,
right. Someone who does have a team involved, although right now it's not looking that good, from Polygon, our friend Sumit Sarkar. Sumit, welcome to the show.
No, it's not looking very good. The Rangers are they just went down 3-1 to the Caps, and actually by the time you listen to this, they may have been eliminated from the playoffs, or they, you know, may have clawed their way back into the series. We'll see what happens. I am optimistic about Game 5 because they were down 3-1 to the Penguins last year at the same point, you know, in the series, obviously, and we're not going home for Game 5. This time they're going back to the Garden, so we'll see.
Well, a couple things here. Number one, it's the NHL, and a 3-1 lead in the NHL is not like a 3-1 lead in most other sports that play seven-game series. Number two, it's the Capitals. And let's just say the Capitals' history with a 3-1 series lead is not exactly dominant. So you got a couple things going for you, Sumit.
It's true, and they also, well, at least Ovechkin and their coach Barry Trotz have never made it out of the second round before.
That is true.
We'll see.
Yep, Barry Trotz never coached 1 minute of an NHL conference finals. So, will be interesting. And, of course, our good friend, the king of Diamond Dynasty, from That Sports Gamer, Mr. TJ Lowerman. TJ, welcome to the show.
Rich, may the 8th be with you.
I just knew that was coming somehow.
And also, I just wanted to say a great job on last week's show with Ryan and Cicero. Great hearing the Press Row podcast talking about Montana 16.
Yeah, you know, let's just get right to that. That generated some very interesting commentary. Plenty of people like, hey, that was fun, that was cool. Then some people who really took exception to their perception of the tone. And, you know, everybody has their opinions on what they want and don't want from a game. And, you know, I was genuinely surprised that people thought that that was an attack on really anybody. I think people certainly felt like there was it wasn't so much a Joe Montana analysis as it was almost a, you know, talking negatively about people who want a new football game. And I did not feel that way at all. But other people did. I mean, just go around the horn real quick. TJ, what was your interpretation? You know, what was your thoughts on basically the conversation about Joe Montana? Did you feel it was negative, positive, in the middle? You know, curious what you thought.
I think you and Cicero were kind of semi-negative, but I thought Ryan was very, what's the word the politicians use when they're,
there's a lot of them.
You know what? Not like Fox. This is what I thought. Ryan's breakdown was actually very fair and balanced. Look at the game.
I mean, I give Ryan a lot of credit. I mean, he did some research. Mm-hmm. He found, you know, some very specific things on different people that are potentially contributing to him. And I thought it was interesting. What I was a little taken aback by then was people thinking that I was somehow almost making fun or we were making fun of people who wanted a football game. That was absolutely not my intention, nor is it my attitude. I mean, I'm pretty sure I've been clear, and I think we all have, that we all love sports games and want new sports games. The more, the better. They don't have to all be licensed. They don't all have to be sim. They can be all kinds of different experiences. So I want to state unequivocally for the record that I absolutely want that. On the other hand, you have to be, you know, objective when you look at these things. We don't know anything real about Joe Montana football. You know, you can't read what people that, you know, anonymously post and accept it as true. You can't also accept it as not true. So, you know, we're looking at this stuff. We're all hopeful. It'd be great, right, if, you know, Joe Montana walks on the stage at E3 at the Microsoft press conference holding up a Vince Lombardi trophy and proclaiming the return of the NFL, you know, the competition in the NFL, Brian. I mean, wouldn't that be the best possible thing that happened if a new NFL sim football game got announced at E3?
Yeah, but we live in reality, right? So I think it was appropriate that that there was someone on the show that basically dismissed the idea of having any interest in an unlicensed football game, because look, the truth is that the number of people who would care about an unlicensed football game are far outweighed by the number of people who would have no interest in it. So the idea that just because someone isn't interested in a fantasy world type football game, you know, I don't think there's anything wrong with discussing that that approach, because look, you know, we're very open to all these games. I mean, if we weren't, we wouldn't have given Super Mega Baseball practically, you know, it wouldn't have almost won our sports game of the year.
That's true.
An unlicensed baseball game, arcade, basically on the arcade side of things. We're at a point where we have nothing but speculation. There's zero to go off here other than it sure looks like it's going to be an unlicensed game. And they don't seem interested in providing anything more than that, so people are going to speculate and run wild with it. Some people are going to cook up these theories that it's going to be, you know, exclusive here, it's going to have this, it's going to do this better than Madden, and you can't really put any stock into anything yet. But just as someone can say they're open to an unlicensed game, anyone else who has the opinion that, you know, if it's a football game without NFL teams and NFL players, I'm just not going to have any interest in it. There's nothing wrong with sharing that perspective either.
Oh, totally agree. Yep. And, you know, I'll tell you right now, because of what we do here, and, you know, I'm more interested in an unlicensed football game than I would have been 5 or 10 years ago when I didn't have, you know, as much of my time and efforts, you know, built around discussing and talking about sports video games. But yeah, I definitely feel like I'm in the minority because, you know, we are the core sports game guys. I mean, that's what we do. And we, I think, could, you know, particularly if there are new and interesting ways to play it, like if we could all play together in some sort of online franchise or tournaments, we could probably get over the fact that there might not be license if a game is a lot of fun and there's, you know, different ways to play it. But yeah, it is difficult to imagine a wide-ranging group of people that would go for a simulation sports game if it doesn't have a big-time license, whether it's NFL or, you know, any of the other major leagues. But we'll see, right? We'll definitely see. So anyway, yeah, there was some interesting discussion about last week's show, and there is no such thing as a wrong opinion, unless, of course, it is Submits Our Cars, in which case it's completely wrong. Oh, I'm sorry, I forgot Submit was here. My bad. No, definitely nothing wrong with your opinion at all, Submit, even though you are a Rangers fan. But I do want to go to you, Submit, for a second on this whole Joe Montana thing. We haven't talked about it a lot except for last week, and obviously you weren't on last week's episode. What's your... You know, if you had to predict, what will any sort of Joe Montana football announcement at E3 be? Where would you think that would land?
Well, I don't know if it'll be E3. I mean, you remember a couple of years ago, Montana came out for Madden, right?
That's right. On the Microsoft stage, right? It was a Kinect based thing, if I correct. He was like yelling at his. he's like,
yeah, with Peter Moore. Oh, actually, maybe that was the Xbox One reveal event. I can't remember, but
I believe Andrew Wilson was actually on stage for that.
Oh, right. Yeah. I have the same expectations as you guys in terms of what this game will be. You know, we've seen a lot of hints and rumors, and whispers, but I mean, of course, the things that we've seen have ranged from like the curious to the absurd, I think. And I think when you consider what the market is like for football video games, I don't mean the audience, the market. I mean like the possibility of something entering that market as a competitor, you know, there just aren't that many avenues for a new football game to go down, and so I think, you know, anybody who thinks that this isn't going to be an unlicensed thing or you know, a mobile thing or both is deluding themselves. And you know, I mean, announce it at E3 or not, I'm curious and excited to see what it is, certainly, because like all of you, I'm always interested in, I mean, competition seems like a strange word to use here, because again, this wouldn't, I don't think this kind of game would really compete with Madden. Just like Super Mega Baseball launching in December was not really going to compete with the show. They're just very different types of games. But I'm still excited and I'm still curious because I like video games, I like sports games, and we'll see what this one's about, hopefully soon.
Yep, for sure. All right, let's get into a few things. We're going to talk about what we've been playing. We are going to talk a little bit about the EA Sports. They had their recent investor call with their quarter. We're not going to talk a whole lot about that, but we got to talk a little bit about some of the implications to our favorite games, including FIFA. We're also going to talk a little bit about the role that social media is playing with sports games and the very different ways that different games approaches to social media, you know, have taken, particularly as we have gotten into our current generation. So let's kick it off. TJ Lowerman, what have you been playing?
Rich, I've been playing a little game known as MLB The Show.
It's so good.
As you may have noticed, I've pretty much completely given up on our Madden League, though my Cyber Colts have made it to the playoffs, and I will be winning the Super Bowl again this year. I just wanted to thank everybody for the support. Andrew Luck is now healthy.
Will it be you playing, or are you just hoping that the Sim Gods win it for you?
No, I'm going to take some time out of my Madden, out of my MLB playing, and check back in with Madden, see how that's going. But yeah, Andrew Luck and me, we're going to win the Super Bowl. My Diamond Dynasty team is going to win Diamond Dynasty as an idea, and you know, be amazing at it. And my true 162 team in MLB has currently working on a comeback. Down 5 runs because of the in-game save feature is the greatest part of this game. I was down 5 runs and I was like, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to save this because obviously whatever I'm doing right now is not working. Come back a couple days later, score 4 runs in my first at bat and end up losing 11-10 in the 10th inning. But now I can focus on the show, so that's great. Isn't that even better than playing games?
I think so. I have no problem with that.
Or we can just start the next game while we're still talking.
Brian Weider, what have you been playing?
Yeah, pretty much everything. All my time has gone towards the show recently, and we're doing that online franchise, which still hasn't completely crumbled.
Not yet.
No, it's hanging in there. My Mariners are 13-4, and pulled off, I think, the only user trade that's been made this season. I sent Seager and Ruggiano to the Padres in exchange for Kemp and Solarte. And this is really just a trade of guys who we couldn't hit with. Kyle Seager is rated 89 or something in the game. And I don't know why I couldn't. It might be the stance. You know how it is for some people. It might be a stance or something else. But I couldn't hit with him. He was batting 139 for me. Meanwhile, I have guys like Logan Morrison batting 419. So I decided, you know, get rid of a guy who couldn't hit and get back somebody who might be able to. And Kemp for him was only batting 149. So we're going to see if there's a little experiment here, if these guys can produce for us as opposed to the guys we sent away. So that'll be interesting. And then, I'm raking with Nelson Cruz. He's still putting up big numbers. Robinson Cano is coming on strong, though, as well. And then I've got two Cy Young candidates in Felix and James Paxton. Putting up really impressive numbers. So that's where all the time's been, just because when I've got an hour or two, I just want to sit down and play. And I wouldn't be doing this if it was just an offline franchise. I like keeping the stats, comparing them, seeing, hey, I'm better than TJ, it looks like, in this category. That kind of stuff is fun for me. So that's what I've been playing.
So Mitzar Carr, what have you been playing?
I've been playing nothing because I moved out last weekend, really over the past week plus. I now got a nice apartment in Astoria. Everyone should come visit. All of our listeners, I'll invite you to our, my housewarming party, which we're not going to have for a while because my roommate and I both have like super full weekends in May. But anyway, yeah, I have not really been able to play anything because of the move. I still haven't set up my my consoles except for my PS4, which I had to set up last night to check on the status of PT, which I didn't have any intention of playing because I don't like scary things.
Yeah.
But for a news story, which was that it's now gone completely, even if you had already downloaded it and, you know, attached it to your PSN account, it's just gone from Sony's servers. So I hope you didn't delete it, because I sacrificed it for the good of Polygon News. I did download Wolfenstein the Old Blood. Really excited to jump into that because Wolfenstein the New Order was one of my favorite games of 2014 for sure. And I'm going to have to jump back into Destiny real soon because I am reviewing the new expansion, House of Wolves, which is coming out in less than 2 weeks now.
Nice. So kind of, you know, along the lines of TJ and Brian, I have been spending a crazy amount of time, relatively speaking, playing the show. I continue to be just enamored of the game. I, whenever I can play it, I do. And, you know, it's hard to put my finger on exactly what it is about the show. Yes, it looks great. Yes, it plays really well. You know, yes, it feels like I am rewarded when I play smartly, and I am, you know, it feels like there's a lot of decisions that are important. You know, there are many times when I'm playing an NBA, which I love, or NHL, which I like, or Madden, which I like, and I make a decision that almost feels like there's no real impact. But boy, when it's the seventh inning of a tight game and I got to, you know, make that call as to whether I leave my starter in or bring in that left-handed reliever specialist, you know, I really have to stop and think about it, and I got to weigh the odds. And, you know, I completely remain enamored of the show. And I'm playing two different franchises. I'm playing one offline franchise. You guys may remember a couple weeks ago I was struggling with whether I should keep my original Mets franchise that I started before the official Operation Sports rosters came out, or whether I should start a new franchise with the official ones. And my Mets, my first franchise Mets, were doing okay, a couple games under 500. Well, I decided to at least start franchise number two with the Mets with the real rosters. And let's just say I'm feeling very good about that decision. Those Mets, and by the way, when I'm playing my franchise, I'm playing most of the games on the treadmill. I player lock with Lucas Duda through at least the sixth and sometimes the seventh inning, and then pick up the rest of the game from there on. I've talked about that quite a bit. Those Mets are 17-4. 17-4. And, you know, Lucas Duda hitting 325 with three homers, 13 RBIs. David Wright, 321, four homers, 13 RBIs. Matt Harvey's 4-1 with a 236. Bartolo Colon is 4-0. John Neese, 3-1. Dylan G, 3-0 with a 1.82 ERA. Mejia has seven saves in seven games. This team is playing great. Now, it is the show, so I will hit a long, difficult stretch. They will go into slumps. But the fact is that I've already got all these wins in the bank. Makes me feel good. What's interesting is, Brian, as you mentioned it, I'm also playing in our online franchise as the Kansas City Royals. Mm-hmm. You may recall about a month ago, I said, boy, the Mets have zero speed, and they still have no speed. I don't think I have more than one or two stolen bases, and that was probably by mistake. Kansas City is a completely different team than the Mets, particularly on offense. They don't really have much power, but boy, do they have speed. While I think I have at the most two stolen bases with the Mets in my offline franchise, in my online franchise, both Dyson and Kane have 16 stolen bases apiece, and Escobar has 10. So those guys, Rich, are so fast. Yeah.
Now, I have a question for you because you're stealing bases. I rarely attempt it. Do you try to get a bigger lead off the base? Or because every time I try to do that, the CPU throws to first base.
Right.
And either gets me or they just keep doing it over and over, and then I just have to give up.
Yeah, no, I don't. I don't take a lead for exactly that reason, right?
Yeah.
Because I got things to do, and I don't have time for the CPU to throw it back to first base. But Dyson's speed rating is 99, so I don't need that extra spot. Mm-hmm. You know, and Kane is in the high 80s, and so no, I don't take the lead off for exactly that reason. But man, these guys fly, and there have been games that I have won absolutely because I've been able to get a guy on, get one of those guys on first base, steal the base, sacrifice him over to third, and then with one out, drive him in. Like, that is how I play these games and win. Now, my Royals are only 11-6, but they're 11-6, and I think I've won four in a row. So I've really started to pick it up. But most of the games I play with these Royals are 1-2-run games at the most. And it's just a lot of fun playing with two very different teams that are built, particularly on offense, two very different ways. And it just, again, highlights to me how great, in many ways, the show is. That, it really is, you play the game very differently based upon the type of players that you have. It's just, man, I just keep playing it. If I wasn't constantly traveling and working and stuff, I would play it even more. But every chance I get to play the show, I do, and I pack in a lot. So, yeah, it's continues to be great. I love it, and it's better than ever. All right, so I mentioned earlier the EA Electronic Arts had their latest earnings conference call, and there were some interesting tidbits that came out of it. EA is doing, relatively speaking, very well financially. They have hit some pretty important numbers. We're not going to break those down. No need to here. This is not a business podcast. But those of us who love sports games, obviously EA controls most of the market for sports games. And Ultimate Team continues to fuel their growth. Brian, you had a good piece today in Pasta Padre talking about this at a pretty high level. And I've got some tweets recently from some folks asking about FIFA, where we think FIFA is going. And if you listen and read some of the comments from Andrew Wilson in particular, you'll hear that, what we already knew, but it's interesting to hear it said so clearly about how important Ultimate Team remains with FIFA. So, for example, Andrew Wilson said, nearly 6 months after launch, FIFA 15 remains a top five title in the Western world, more than 18 million matches played on average every day in the fourth quarter. But they also said in their conference that the changes they made to reduce illegitimate coin selling in FIFA Ultimate Team, were significant, and those changes actually slowed the growth of their sales or some of their digital revenue, even though FIFA Ultimate Team expanded over 40%. So they took steps during the quarter to reduce the trading of these illegitimate FIFA Ultimate Team coins, which had, quote, distorted the economy, made it difficult for many players to build the team they wanted. They made changes to limit the game exploits and automated processes that used to generate those coins, and taken steps to rebalance the game economy. Some risks remain, and they factored those into our Q1 and full year guidance. TJ Lauerman, this is a big deal that this kind of stuff now related to the, quote unquote, nefariousness of these Ultimate Team coins is actually hitting earnings and getting mentioned on conference calls. I was really surprised to hear that mention. You hearing this, does that surprise you? Or, is this something that you sort of, based upon your experience with this, you kind of expected to be a drag on earnings?
Yeah, I figured it would hurt it a little bit because, people are spending millions and millions of dollars on this game. So you got to figure they're spending a lot of money, even with the nefarious ways, and taking that out, a lot of those people probably aren't going to be like, oh, well, I was going to spend, $200 on buying coins, I'll go spend the $200 on buying packs. They're probably going to be like, yeah, you know what? Maybe I just won't spend that money at all or go somewhere else. So I think they knew they were going to take a hit. Hopefully they actually did project it right and they can get back on track fast.
Brian, were you surprised to hear this, frank conversation about the problems related to Ultimate Team in a investor conference call? And if so, I'm surprised what you thought about it.
Well, if it hurt their,
what you thought about it, excuse me.
Yeah, if it hurt their bottom line, they're going to bring it up because they think they can recover from that and see growth again in the next quarter or whenever FIFA 16's Ultimate Team comes out. But I think most people had this theory that they were shutting off the coin selling, the exploits to sell externally because they wanted people to spend money within their ecosystem. So instead of taking that $50 and buying coins from somebody, that they'd take that $50 and spend money on packs. And I don't think it necessarily translates that way for people who play the game, because there people were buying – TJ can correct me if I'm wrong here. People were buying coins because they wanted to acquire – or not buying coins necessarily, but they wanted to acquire an individual player, right? Yep. So that you're probably not going to get in packs, so that they would go and say, you know, we'll make this exchange because I want to get this player, and then that person lists – the player for really cheap as a buy it now or whatever, right? Is that how it worked?
Yeah, the player would, or whoever would buy it would put up some random card for, mm-hmm. you know, a million coins or whatever they buy. And then the other account would buy that card at that inflated price. And then that whoever bought the coins could go and buy whatever players they wanted with it.
Yeah, and so that's really the issue with these modes is that there's some kind of balance that has to be met between making it challenging for people to build teams, but and allowing them to get the players that they want, because in the end, it's about having fun, right? So EA has to find a way to allow for people to acquire players in a more fair manner than just luck of the draw in packs. And we see that in Diamond Dynasty now. Does anybody open packs, TJ? Could they all just go to the market and buy people individually, right?
Yeah, I think the majority has just moved straight to just using the market.
Yeah, so there's, you know, probably two ends of the spectrum there, and both games, both development teams will probably look at ways to balance them a little better, so that the only way to acquire the players that you want to get to have the most fun as you want wouldn't just be from going to the market and buying them individually. So I think that's what you're seeing there in FIFA is people saying, well, I'm not going to throw that money into packs then, because it's usually a waste of money.
So, TJ, what's the impact of somebody like me if I just start dabbling in Ultimate Team with all of this, you know, stuff going on that EA has tried to tamp down? But, like, you know, is there truly an impact to me if I'm just kind of dabbling and having a little fun, or is it only if I want to be a serious Ultimate Team player, that's when the activities related to this are really going to just make it not be, you know, competitive or really prevent me from going from being a casual player to somebody trying to be more serious?
Yeah, I think if you're just going to be a casual player, you're not really going to notice it much. They've kind of locked in certain cards to certain price ranges and stuff. So maybe if you're playing casually, I don't know if you're going to get, you know, 200, 300,000 coins to go buy one of these really big players. But if you do make that much, then you'll have a more realistic chance to go onto the marketplace and get a really good player than you would in the past, because with all the coin buying going on, those really good cards would become, well, since they're already so rare, now people have all these extra coins that they'll be spending like 4 or 5 million coins on one card that you're going to play with. So you would probably never get that card.
Sarkar, is there even any such thing as a casual Ultimate Team player at this point in time, or do we pretty much accept that you're either an Ultimate Team guy or you're not?
You know, I think a few months ago I would have said the latter, that you know, I was definitely not an Ultimate Team guy. I never have been, and you know, I know Owens feels the same, but I think you look at this, what MLB 15, the show, did with Diamond Dynasty, whatever they called it, the revamped Diamond Dynasty mode. Granted, that's, you know, not, it wasn't quite an Ultimate Team mode, but it's much closer to it now, I think. And you know, the way they integrated it with the universal reward system in that game really made me interested in it in a way that very few other Ultimate Team modes have been able to do. And so, granted, I haven't gone back to MLB 15 in a while because I just, you know, been really busy with stuff, but I think that demonstrated to me that it's possible for developers, you know, if they're really interested in, you know, not just like doing the, oh yeah, we, you know, streamlined and simplified it. I mean, they did that in MLB, but it's really kind of a complete reimagining of what Diamond Dynasty used to be. And, you know, I don't think that EA can do that kind of thing with Madden and FIFA Ultimate Team and or Hockey Ultimate Team, because you know those modes are pretty entrenched, and I bet you know people would cry foul if they tried to make major changes. But you know, I think that it is possible for them to bring new people into the fold for sure.
Yeah, I just want to say I think the best thing that happened for MLB is going to sound stupid is that the last 2 years that they've had Diamond Dynasty is that their network code sucked and no one could really play it. And when they did try to play it, it was really terrible. So Diamond Dynasty probably wasn't making them that much money. So they had the chance to change it very dramatically to try to get people in. And now that the netcode actually works, you can actually navigate the menus. More people are actually coming in here to play. And I've been getting a lot of tweets saying, hey, what do I do to get into, I'm not an Ultimate Team guy, but I'm really into Diamond Dynasty. So we're seeing a lot more casual players getting into Diamond Dynasty right now.
So whenever we have these conversations, or whenever, Brian, like you did today, you posted about the EA earnings call and their, you know, very frank and open discussion about how Ultimate Team, you know, is a focus. You know, Andrew Wilson says, we have great optimism that our growth in Ultimate Team will continue going forward in fiscal year 2016 and beyond. You know, they are continuing to make changes to improve the FIFA Ultimate Team experience. Whenever you have these kinds of conversations, one of the almost knee-jerk reactions at this point in time, correctly or not, is that, oh, you know, it's all about Ultimate Team, Ultimate Team, Ultimate Team. All the other modes, all the other parts of the game are being ignored. I personally, while I feel that it's easy to say that, me, Rich Grisham, I don't play Ultimate Team or Diamond Dynasty, or at least I don't these days, and yet I'm still playing these sports games all the time. And I'm playing in franchises, and I'm playing because the product on the field is good. Am I the anomaly that really thinks that, hey, I don't, that it, yes, there is significant investment in Ultimate Team, but I don't play and I still have a good time? Or is it really, is it true that Ultimate Team is actually funding everything else at this point related to these games, and everybody does win? What's your take, like right now in May of 2015, on that balance between Ultimate Team being the focus versus it kind of raising everything related to the game?
Yeah, I don't know if the genre would be in a healthy place if it weren't for Ultimate Team. Now, I'm not a fan necessarily of what it's meant for the products themselves. But with declining sales for most of these franchises, with franchises dropping off the map, I'm certain we wouldn't have an NBA Live right now without Ultimate Team. And I think it's probable we wouldn't have an NHL without Ultimate Team right now. So they're sustaining these games that are either struggling or don't have much potential for growth as far as sales numbers go. But I do think it affects development. Resources are allocated in certain ways. Would MLB The Show's Road to the Show be much different this year if they hadn't put all their time into Diamond Dynasty? I mean, those are the decisions they have to make when they develop these games. Is, you know, we have limited resources and we have to figure out what we want to prioritize. And obviously, number one is going to be, where are we going to make the most money from? And that's not, again, we've talked about this many times, Rich. It's not, we don't want to, that's not a negative thing. They have to make money. Correct. The games wouldn't exist if they didn't make money.
Yep.
We actually, as sports gaming fans, we have to hope that they have success in this area, because the products will change significantly if they don't, probably for the worse. They'll go free-to-play model, you know, all this kind of stuff. So I'm still looking towards a future where we have some kind of subscription model and Ultimate Teams branch off into their own games, because I do think we're going to have free-to-play Ultimate Team games on consoles sooner rather than later. And hopefully that would mean that the standard products get all the attention they deserve, but there'll probably be some other form of digital revenue built into those before they can branch Ultimate Team off of them. So it's a double-edged sword. You got Ultimate Team, which is important to the success of these franchises. But then you also, people who don't play it may feel neglected to an extent, because part of the decision making is definitely going to be, we have to put this amount of time into our revenue driven modes, and that might mean we have to neglect other areas of the game.
TJ, what's your gut tell you about the percentage of people that are spending money on Diamond Dynasty versus those who spend money in FIFA Ultimate Team and Madden Ultimate Team, or perhaps NBA 2K? Is it the same? Is it more? Is it less? Like, what's your gut tell you?
I think it's less, just because I know I've spent less, and I keep wanting to spend money, but I don't. If you want to send me some money, I'd be more than happy to do it.
TJ, is that because of how the mode is built? Is that because the packs are largely worthless, or is it something? Is it just a financial decision?
A little bit of column A, a little bit of column B, but I do like that they give you the ability to buy the stub straight up, so I can buy 27,000 stubs for $20 and be like, well, I could open 27 packs, or I could go do the whole Orioles collection, get Brooks Robinson, and have all the Orioles players. That's a cool idea. But I also really like what MLB has done, where the roster of Diamond Dynasty players matches the live roster that they put out every week. So there's a stock market aspect of, hey, Jimmy Garcia, I don't know what this guy's name is on the Dodgers. He's hot right now. He's real hot. Go buy him for like 10 coins. In a week or two, he might get a boost in his stats. Then he's going to be a better card for you. But then you could also probably sell him for more coins. And it brings in a whole new level of thinking about stuff where, you know, the FIFAs and the Maddens, when a player does good, they're going to get a new card. And that old card is just going to drop off the face of the earth. You know what I mean?
Yep.
So it's I think it's more fun playing that stock market kind of game than just going in and buying packs and packs and packs and packs. And I think that's what a lot of people are getting out of Diamond Dynasty this year. And that's why I did a piece for this website. I don't know if you guys have heard of it, pastapadre.com, where we talked about some of the stuff going on in the market. And people are very interested in that stuff. And people are tweeting me every day saying, hey, have you seen how good Jock Peterson's doing? His card's going for like 10 stubs or 50 stubs. Should I get a bunch of them now and sell them later? And it's like, yeah, that's way more fun than you have a 64 Jock Peterson card now than a 64 Jock Peterson card, a 72 Jock Peterson card, and an 88 Jock Peterson card.
And I think that's
a lot more fun this way.
It's a smart way to keep people engaged too, because it's just like fantasy baseball. You're going to be watching stats. We've got people on Twitter predicting players who are going to be going up. Who should you buy? Who should you flip? You know, that kind of stuff. And I think it's compelling stuff to not only be involved in, but kind of to follow, just like your piece that you wrote up, TJ. And it's, I think my team mode in NBA 2K tried something like this, and it was a failure. And that's why they dumped it after the first year. But for baseball, I think it makes a lot of sense. And if they continue, and if it's consistent throughout the season, I think that'll be one of the best aspects of this mode.
Yeah, it's one of those things where if you walk away from your FIFA or your Madden team for a couple days, you know, you come back and you're still staring at the same team. Mm-hmm. But in MLB, you might come back and you're like, oh, well, Anthony Rizzo went from an 84 to an 86, so he's going to be playing better for me. But then my shortstop dropped off, so I might have to go look out for a new guy over there. And it just adds a lot more depth to the day-to-day marketing or, like, market searching for the game.
So, Mitsarkar, you talk to developers on a regular basis, including many of those who make the games, the sports games that we talk about. What's your sense as to how they balance, you know, the combination of, well, you know, they clearly... It's a mode meant to generate additional revenue, but it's also a mode that needs to be user-friendly, needs to get people in. You want to have people be able to play, but without feeling as if you're trying to grab their money right away, especially if it's a game that they've already paid $60 for. You know, what's your sense that, you know, because we know the focus of what they call live services, which is, you know, sort of their entire service built around Ultimate Team, that they look at things like what MLB The Show is doing and not having it be as perhaps money driven versus what they know works and where they have issues. Like, what's your sense as to how much or little they might change their Ultimate Team models, you know, for this year, next year, based upon all these different factors?
Well, for one thing, you know, I'm sure all of these studios employ actuaries or, you know, people who are really, really, really good at math to do estimates on what a particular change might do to their revenue, right? I mean, they can kind of do their best to predict that, oh, you know, because we change this, it's going to mean that fewer people are going to be encouraged to spend money here, you know, in this particular way or whatnot. So, you know, I'm sure they have at least a pretty good handle, I would think, on, you know, what they can do to change these modes and how those changes will affect the revenue streams. But you know, you mentioned live services, and my understanding is that in general, you know, these studios have separate teams to handle this stuff. Brian was talking about he expects them to be eventually these modes to be broken out as free to play products, and I do too. I'm you know, kind of surprised it hasn't happened yet, except for one thing, which is that, you know, at this point, you have EA, 2K, Sony publishing these $60 annual products that have the modes built in. So, for the cost of producing this annual franchise, you know, they are also baking in this entire mode that's designed around microtransactions, right? So they get $60 per customer, and then there is baked in the potential for additional revenue. If you break off the ultimate team type modes into their own free-to-play thing, then and you have nothing of that ilk in the main game, then you're back to square one, back to, you know, pre-PS3 360, where you just have the $60 retail product and nothing beyond that, right? So I think that's sort of, you know, if you want to talk about revenue driving decisions, right? That's sort of my guess at the main reasoning for why they haven't put out separate things. But going back to what I was saying, you know, about live services teams, they do have these separate teams, and it seems like it's more cost effective to keep those teams working on what is overall the same game as opposed to, you know, spinning them out and or spinning them off and having, you know, a maybe larger team that requires more resources dedicated to a single free-to-play product that's separate completely from the $60 retail product.
You know, one of the things that drives me crazy, I've talked about it, is that for some reason, and I don't know why, I mean, obviously because accounting rules allow them to, but they don't really, you know, EA, and I don't think anybody does, separates out the very specific profits or losses that the individual games make. Like, they don't say exactly how many copies of a particular game was sold. You know, they'll throw numbers out at you that are either really good or at best not terrible as much as possible. And one of the other, you know, one of the things, and Brian, we've chatted a little bit about it, is we know that there's this thing called FIFA Online 3, which I believe is in China, which is a free-to-play Ultimate Team type game. They will not say how it's doing or not. They just said that, you know, extra content and free to download is expected to grow approximately 10% this year, driven by FIFA Online 3 and Ultimate Team.
But, and there's FIFA World also, another PC free to play Ultimate Team game.
All right. So, I mean, those games are the experiments that will ultimately decide whether or not Ultimate Team is spun out, right? I mean, that's why these things exist. Isn't that right?
That and mobile also. I mean, they've been proving the model for a couple of years now, and that's what they always go back and cite, is the digital revenue made from free-to-play games on mobile, and then they started offering the free-to-play on PC with the Ultimate Team model, and we're still in the early stages of that, a year or two now. But I'm sure, you know, it's just a matter of time before we find the first sports game on consoles that goes that route.
You know, and as EA also said, FIFA Ultimate Team still remain the significant percentage of revenue from Ultimate Team still comes outside of North America. So while FIFA is popular in North America, it is, you know, the bulk of the Ultimate Team revenue comes from outside it. So that lends me to believe that at least in the North American market, the idea of a, you know, free-to-play Ultimate Team mode separate from the annual box copy or, you know, digital box copy release remains, you know, in the distance. Probably will happen one day, but not anytime in the next few years at least. So, well, all right, that's our that'll wrap up the business report section. Let's talk a little bit. Oh boy, this will be interesting. Let's talk a little bit about social media. Now, you know, I don't know about you guys, but I don't even know if I, you know, ran a very large company or a very large entity like a sports video game that had millions and millions of followers and people who play the game, whether I would even want to engage in social media. I mean, you know, we all know the horror stories of the ways that social media can be used by people in ways that are certainly not nice, to put it mildly. Yet, all of the games, NBA, Madden, FIFA, NHL, NBA 2K, NBA Live, all of these games have very significant social media community, or not communities, but very significant social media presence. And they've all evolved in different ways. So let's chat a little bit about how those evolutions have taken place, what we think about them, and perhaps even what we would do the same or differently. Brian, let's start with you. Let's just sort of outline your analysis as to each of the big guys, and let's start with Madden. What's your take on how Madden uses social media, you know, to promote their game, or, you know, what are their tactics, and what do you think about that?
Yeah, really, EA wide, they've changed a little over the past few years, but now what you find with EA's Twitter and Facebook and the individual games that have their own handles, are they generally don't have much substance to them. It's mostly promotional stuff. They don't engage very much with consumers. They don't really offer much in the way of support. They do at least seem to have, like I said, they've changed. They've gone away a bit from the retweet this or favorite this, you know, type of thing, like retweet if you think this, favorite if you think this, or like this post. There's one a couple years ago. It was like a picture of Marshawn Lynch. This was on their Facebook page. And with it, they included a quote. It was one of Newton's laws of motion. And they said, like this if you agree. Like, if you agree with Newton's third law of motion, like this post. It was. I mean, there were some just as blatant as that. So they, at one point, they were basically just begging for social media numbers, for metrics. And I haven't seen that as much lately. But you don't get a whole lot worthwhile from following their accounts, in my experience.
Now, what about NBA 2K?
Yeah,
you know, that's a different approach to take. What's your analysis on what they do and how they use that platform?
Yeah, it's really almost the opposite in that what they do, anything they can to inflate their metrics, and that includes disrupting and generally just jerking people around. They just care about their numbers, and they don't really. It's not so much about communication or support. Again, like EA, they don't really offer a whole lot of that through their Twitter or Facebook. They went the extra mile. They built features into NBA 2K. They built a separate app which was meant to kind of propel their social accounts even higher and grow that social presence even to a greater degree, where they have people, you know, they're practically demanding people to retweet things. They're demanding them to get a hashtag trending if they want something from them in return. So they're essentially asking people to market for them with nothing in return or very little in return. And it's created actually a lot of anger and frustration. You see that in the replies to every tweet or Facebook post that they put out. 2K tends to troll their fans with these accounts. I would characterize it that way anyway. And now their followers troll them back with their replies. So they've kind of bred and normalized that type of exchange and behavior. Now, all that being said, and I don't like those accounts, all that being said, apparently it has worked because they have the biggest numbers, and they definitely get the most replies, most retweets, most likes of any of the companies as far as particular games go.
And then if you look at the third sort of major area, if this it's Sony and MLB. What is your analysis on how Sony uses the MLB the Show social media platforms and sort of their angle and what they do?
They're largely non-existent in social media. They have accounts. It wasn't until maybe a year ago. They didn't even have a Twitter account, I believe, until like a year ago. But they don't really reply. They don't offer – again, none of them really offer that much in the way of support. But Sony's the Show account offers none. I mean, there was that time where the game didn't show up. When it was supposed to be on digitally, it was supposed to unlock. This was not this year, but last year in MLB 14. And there were nothing. It was just silence, radio silence from their social accounts. The only thing they'll do now with their Twitter and Facebook is they'll post really lame baseball things related to baseball is better. Their tagline for the game, jokes that rarely ever hit. But otherwise, I mean, they don't really do anything of substance on social media.
So, TJ, you're a social media kingpin. Give me your thoughts. Who does it the best? Who doesn't? You know, what do you like? What interactions have you had with the various social media aspects of all these games?
Rich, first I'm going to say, make sure you guys head over to Instagram.com/thatsportsgamer and go like that picture. I think you like double tap on it or something. I put out a picture. It was pretty funny. Also, I have a tweet out at That Sports Gamer. If you believe in gravity, make sure you retweet that. I'd appreciate that. Brian will probably favorite it because he's a piece of human garbage, but I love him anyway. A couple things I just wanted to mention was I find it very interesting the way that 2K handles their basketball stuff. While, of course, they have the 2K Sports account, they also have their community managers are very involved in their own personal accounts.
They are. You're talking about LD2K and Ronnie2K, right?
Yeah. Yeah, and that's not something you really see from the EA Sports one, though I do feel like you see a lot more of the EA Sports developers and stuff using social media, not giving out tons of advice and stuff, but they'll usually say, hey, if you have a problem, go contact EA support and stuff. But I feel like EA has the widest net of people that you can find to talk to about stuff. With, of course, the my tweets are my own, not my company ones.
Yeah, it's not an official capacity, basically.
Yeah.
No. That absolves you of any problems you could ever possibly
have. Oh, of course.
Yeah, then you can just say whatever you want.
No repercussions.
And, I am really disappointed in the way the Sony San Diego team handles the MLB Twitter specifically account. There's never really a thing of substance there. And even when they came out with the Sony San Diego Twitter account a couple of months ago, that's all been about Killstrain and some other game. Maybe that Drawn to Death, I think, is the game. They never really even mentioned that there's a baseball game coming out of there. And when I think of Sony San Diego, all I think about is the baseball game. I just wish I wish there was more and less of the just kind of stupid stuff that people don't really want to read. Like, I don't need to know that gravity exists because it's a thing. Look, I just dropped this. There's gravity. I just proved it. I don't need to retweet and fave that to prove that it happens.
Smith Sarkar, what are your thoughts on the way that social media is used by the various sports game social accounts?
Well, you know, TJ hit on something that I was going to mention. You know, the sort of differences in the approaches with personnel. I've tweeted back and forth with guys from the Madden team, like Clint Oldenburg and people like that. I can't say I've ever tweeted with Ramon from Sony San Diego or any of the 2K developers. I'm not sure what their Twitter accounts are even. But at the same time, I'm kind of with Brian on 2K. We talked earlier tonight about what the Ultimate Team modes mean and how they affect the way these games are developed. They also, in addition to bringing in revenue, they also bring in the Twitter followers, because that's the way that these their floor numbers, especially, you know, Bronny does it all the time, right? And you know, that's what they present as cards, right? So like, you know, things happen in the playoffs or whatever, and you'll just see a string of retweets if you follow Ronnie about people, you know, saying, oh man, I just opened, you know, the code worked and I got a diamond Kevin Durant card or whatever. EA Sports right now, the you know, NHL account is tweeting up a storm about their, you know, every night they've got their, you know, players of the game getting you know, ultimate team cards, right? Tonight it was Palat from the Lightning and Burakovsky from the Caps, and you know, they've even got a great relationship with the NHL itself, because you know, the at NHL Twitter account is tweeting, oh, so and so is our, you know, hut player of the game, and you know, it's a link to you know, EA Sports stuff, right? And like I said, you know, Ronnie's tweeting out locker codes for unlocking stuff in my team, and that's annoying, I think, for followers who don't care about those things, right? Like, sure, it's neat that they're engaging with their fans, but you know, I don't give a crap that Ronnie retweets everybody who happens to snag a diamond Kevin Durant card or whatever. And that kind of thing is a double-edged sword, because sure, it inflates their follower numbers. It increases engagement, quote unquote. But when you look at their actual communication about, you know, issues that players care about, you know, controversies and you know, missteps on the part of the developers, I think it really leaves a lot to be desired. You look at 2K's communication with NBA 2K14 when the servers were a tire fire back in around Christmas of 2013, and you know, they were, you know, weren't really saying anything, or they were saying, you know, just sort of platitudes, and that, you know, wasn't helping anybody, and I'm sure they were getting screamed at on Twitter, and that can't be fun. But you look at that, and then thinking of you don't really have too many specific guys with WWE, but I think Marcus Stevenson, who used to work at EA, I believe, is, you know, one of their community managers, and you know, he, I saw, had some pretty odd tweets about people asking why Chris Benoit created wrestlers were getting deleted, and you know, I looked at him and the stuff he was responding with, and he was kind of being a, you know, like a little bit of a jerk, or just, you know, brushing off people when they were tweeting at him. So I think what we're talking about tonight, it definitely is a double-edged sword, you know, whether you're going to have you know, a sort of human face to these games on Twitter, in addition to, you know, the actual, like, franchised Twitter account.
So, TJ Larbin, what would you do, right? If you became the social media coordinator, or I don't know who runs the Twitter for the various games, is it their community manager or whomever? What would you use the platform to do? You know, whether you want to pick a game specifically and say how you would use Twitter or social media, or just in general. You know, we've talked about what we don't like, but what would you do if it were your job? TJ?
Yep, got that mute button hit down. I'd probably kind of do what a lot of them do, is just tweet out a bunch of generic stuff and not try to get into fights with people, because once you start getting into interaction, then that's when a whole lot of stuff can go bad. So I'd probably try to avoid that if that's humanly possible. But yeah, sports games, you know, throw out stats, make people happy. But it's a tough job. I wouldn't wish that on anybody. That seems like a lot of work.
I mean, Smith, same question to you. Like, what would your approach be if you were the social media coordinator for one of these big time games?
Yeah, I think it is. You know, for all the criticisms that we're spouting here, it is a really tough job. You know, I have an acquaintance who was working on the WWE community team. He's a, you know, wrestling fan. Was I think you know, happy to get the job, and then eventually decided to leave, basically for his own mental health, because, you know, he was just getting a torrent of abuse from people who play the games, you know, on and you know, as that guy, right? Like, it's his job to deal with that stuff, to be the forward facing person for the company, right? And you know, I think it's definitely worth pointing out, or definitely necessary to point out that it's not necessarily a job I would want, but sure, if you're going to ask me, you know, the way I would do it, I think that if you are going to be or actually, you know, regardless of how you're doing it, if you're going to be a public, you know, person, a public face, for your game, a spokesperson like a Major Nelson or something, or, you know, if you are going to just tweet anonymously from at MLB the show or at EA Sports NHL or whatever, I just think that you should be straight with people, and that's the opposite of, like, probably what their PR people tell them to do. But, you know, don't ignore people who are tweeting at you about controversies, because that's, I think, the worst thing you can do. I mean, well, I guess the worst thing from a PR standpoint is if you know, blow up or tweet the N-word or something. But, you know.
Yeah, that would that would definitely qualify as the worst. For
that'd
sure.
be pretty bad. But you know, no one likes to be ignored, least of all people who are very passionate about these games, who buy them every year for $60 a pop. And you know, when they feel like their concerns aren't being seen, you know, let alone, you know, taken into account in some way, they'll turn on you really quickly.
And there's probably stuff when somebody tweets something at you, you're like, yeah, they're working on it, but you just can't say that because you're not allowed. And I think that's probably the hardest part for most community people.
I mean, Brian Weida, you interact with people on Twitter all the time. You know, when people are respectful to you, you're respectful to them. I think we are all that way. If you were running the social media for one of these games, what would your approach be? What would you sort of, you know, if you could have it your way, what would the focus of your content be? How often would you do it? And what would your, you know, level of interaction with the fans potentially be? I'm curious how you would approach it.
Yeah, I would definitely be more responsive. I think they should be more responsive to people, more informative. There's a lot about these games people don't know, or a lot about different avenues they can take to enjoying the games. So it's not even just dealing with problems, but there's a lot of stuff about these games that, why doesn't MLB the Show have an instruction manual yet? MLB 15 the Show, you go to their website, there's no instruction manual. It says coming soon. I mean, there's stuff they can teach you, tutorials, things like that. It can be used for that. It can be used for responding to people who are having issues. I think that's always a big thing. But then there are other things that they should just avoid, right? The locker code thing with NBA 2K is a huge one right now. I do not understand the logic in running promotions where 99.9% of your customers end up disappointed and frustrated. It doesn't make sense to me to do that. Like, this whole thing of teasing people constantly about stuff they might be able to get if they follow their accounts and are on at the exact time and type in 25 letters faster than anyone else. I don't understand the logic in disappointing the vast majority of your customers. You know, you can go to. I had another example I was really excited to share, but that was one of the main ones that stood out to me, is that, you know, do things that engage with your fans in a positive way instead of negative, leaving people feeling negative towards you at the end of the day.
You know, it is so. Common, it is so, I don't want to use the word easy, but man, it it's so easy to say that you want to be positive, and then you get out there in the world that is social media, and oh my gosh, it gets so bad so quickly. It's almost like you wonder, why would you even do it at all, right? Like, what is the value what's the value of having a Twitter account, right? Like, if you have 500,000 followers or 750,000 followers, what is that actually, what value does that translate into versus the, you know, potential negative drawbacks of trying to interact with people who, even if it's a small percentage of people, they're out there, they're loud, they're rude, they're obnoxious. You know, what's even the value at all, Smith Sarkar, of having these social media accounts? What does it actually get these games?
Well, for one thing, you don't want some Yahoo taking the account and just tweeting random garbage. That's the main thing, right? Like, when Elo came out, like, I was like, I have no intention of using a new social network, but I'm going to go register at Sumit Sarkar so someone else can't take it. That's one of the main things, I'm sure. But I think that, you know, there's definitely many corporate accounts or you know, accounts tweeting on behalf of games or studios that do it right, and I think that's, you know, the there are different approaches to that, but to me it's about respecting your fans and engaging with your fans in a way that is, you know, less superficial than cheap tricks designed to just get them to like or favorite or follow or whatever. And the value is that it becomes a snowball, right? Like, you might start out with a pretty small number of people, but as you know, as your popularity builds, your social media presence is going to build, hopefully, as well, right? And the main thing there is that it becomes a way to obviously promote your product, right? Like, you look at a game like I think Evolve, which was pretty impressive to me. You know, they'd announced that game a while ago and had been promoting it for a long time, but what was particularly impressive to me was like, oh, you know, this is a new IP that has kind of come out of nowhere, and they had, you know, a couple of 100,000 Facebook followers or something like that in I think a relatively short time for something that's, you know, people didn't really know what it was, and you know, even you look at EA, which is like the most hated company in the world every year or in whatever, and you know, they've got I think more than 1 million followers on Facebook. So you know, if you work hard at it and you know, even if people don't like your company, if you provide useful information to them or useful interactions, they're going to be there for you.
Well, all right. We've covered Ultimate Team. We've covered social media. I think we've done our jobs here, gentlemen. What do you say? As always, I want to thank everybody for joining us this week. We really appreciate it. I want to say thank you, of course, to Sumit and to TJ and to Brian. I also want to, as always, say thank you to the great folks at Operation Sports for making this happen each and every week. And lastly, but certainly not least, thank you to all of the listeners for listening and for downloading, for linking, for commenting, for subscribing, for giving us reviews, all that good stuff. That all helps us continue to put these shows out every week. So we thank you for that. And so on behalf of Brian Weedar from Pasta Padre, Sumit Sarkar from Polygon, and TJ Lauerman from That Sports Gamer, I am Rich Grisham. Thank you for listening, and we will talk to you again next week. Well, thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Press Row Podcast, brought to you by Operation Sports. We ask that you please subscribe to the show on iTunes and Stitcher and the Windows phones. We also ask that you give us a rating. That really helps us a lot. We also ask that you please follow each of our panelists on Twitter, and they are as follows. Polygon's Owen Good at Owen Good. Pasta Padre's Brian Medai at Pasta Padre. Polygon Sumit Sarkar at Sumit Sarkar. That Sports Gamers TJ Lowerman at That Sports Gamer. US Gamers Cat Bailey at The _ Catbot. Operation Sports Chris Sanner at Chris SNR. And Operation Sports Steve No at Steve _OS. And of course me, Rich Grisham at Rich Grisham. So thank you so much for listening to the show. We really appreciate it. And we really want to thank the great people at Operation Sports for making this show happen every single week. So thanks. We'll see you again next time.